You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Madden!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey Bunty, greetings from San Francisco. So you're back in London and we have a long weekend here with Memorial Day coming up tomorrow. I believe you guys have a bank holiday on Monday as well. So how are things?
Yeah, it's good, Rohit. I think I flew back from San Francisco midweek after having a great time together and doing some interesting episodes and having some discussions with different people there. Having got back, just getting used to things, you know, and since we last were together in your basement studio, obviously the election results have come out because when we were talking about it last, we were still talking about opinion polls. So that's the big story that has kind of broken since we were in with each other in San Francisco. So let's talk about that. Why don't you set the ball rolling? What is your view on how the elections are netted out?
Yeah, so lots of things, and I'll just give a sort of broad sketch. I think my sense was from what I was hearing that the BJP was still going to come back, Modi was still going to win, and that the BJP would probably cross that magical 272 mark anyways, or they would come like pretty close to it. So that was one idea. At most, there may have been a range of, I'd say it might have, been lower by around 20 odd seats. So I thought that they'd be somewhere in the 240, 270. There were a number of sort of diagnoses going around where people were saying that, no, they'll get anywhere from, 180 to 210. They'll still be the single largest party. They'll probably form the government with a coalition, but it's going to be a weaker government, etc. And then, because that really seemed to be the kind of consensus. So I don't know if they managed to, the BJP sort of perception machine, propaganda machine, election machine, managed to, lull people into a false sense of security. And that's what went down. There certainly have been, no dearth of conspiracy theories. But my sense is that, in fairness, I don't think there was any tampering. I don't think there was significant tampering. I think there was some, I do think there was some shabbiness. To me, in as much as, there have been any structural issues that would have moved things in the direction of the BJP, those are in the form of, for instance, I think the election commission, being completely partisan towards the BJP. The media doing, over a period of time, doing a hack job on the Congress and just simply refusing to, to critically examine the BJP in the same way that it went after the Congress on absurd grounds. The reason for that has to do with the fact that, the Modi government, even by BJP standards, is vicious, is a very clear signal to media organizations they have to fall in line, in a way that, the Congress didn't used to do. Chances are, even discounting all of that, the BJP would have come back, because at the end of the day, I do feel that, this victory does reflect something about the Indian people that's shifted. Now, it's a more complex question of, have Indians become more communal, or have we always had this, the Hindu majority has always had this communal streak, but, there were other mitigating factors, and in some ways it was just considered bad form to, publicly be aggressive about this. And now, they're wearing their political hearts on their sleeves, so to say. It's what used to be considered in some ways a bug or a deficiency has now become a feature, so to speak, to draw that technology metaphor. So those are my, somewhat scattered reflections on the result.
I come at it at a different angle. I think, Rohit, that this is the first time that an opposition... India basically had been a one-party state with minor interruptions. There was a comical interruption in 77. And the Atal Bihari government, the second time round, was the only full term that the opposition held down a government. So, in all fairness, we had been kind of a one-party democracy. What has happened now is there has been a non-Congress government for two successive terms. That's what's netting out. And I think where you've called it is you are looking at it from a communalism point of view. The only angle that I lob into the mix is I think if you're sitting in India at the moment and about to walk up and cast your vote, the opposition, right, hasn't got a... if you look at the Chandrababu Naidus, the Mamata Banerjees of the world, the Akhilesh Yadav, the Mayawatis of the world, they somehow don't... they don't even stack up as lesser evil, right? So I think obviously if you kind of polarize the country as majority minority and run the impression, railroad the impression that for 70 years after independence the minorities have been taking the cream from the milk, it is going to be a difficult argument to refute, more so when there is not a credible opposition to refute that argument. So I think it's a combination thing. One is the polarization that has happened in the country. So the country has changed. I think there are probably certain elements which are, you know, have kind of been latent communal, and that's been kind of, you've got a license to express that. I worry it for people who are Muslims, 140 or 190 million people, I think 140 million Muslims. When you wake up and think about, you know, the country you've woken up to, and are you gradually thinking that you're becoming a Hindu Saudi Arabia? That is the version, and I think out of all of this, my concern is that the opposition should get its act together, whether with the Congress at the forefront or somebody else, for a healthy democracy. Otherwise, we'll slip into a one-party democracy again and go the other way. So we were like a one-party democracy for about 70 years, and my sense is that if this type of personality politics in the absence of a strong leader in the opposition ranks goes on, then I think the BJP is here to stay for another 15 years.
Yeah, so... You know, I agree with a lot of what you've said. I mean, I think the point you basically made is that there was a kind of lack of unity in the opposition. They didn't start stitching up alliances together, and they didn't clearly come together and unequivocally state that, you know, whether it's Rajiv Gandhi or Rahul Gandhi, pardon me, or even if it's like Mamata Banerjee or Mayawati, whoever it is, there was no sort of clarity about the fact that this is the person who's going to be the unified leader of the opposition, right? The idea was sort of that, look, I mean, you know, whoever is going to get the largest mandate, whichever party, they'll put forth someone. But there were obviously grumblings of discontent. And I think the ambition of various people suddenly kind of came into the fray. Now, here's my point. Mayawati is not even in the reckoning at the level of the state assembly elections, right? The BJP is sort of not doing very well. The UP has got its kind of act together there, and if there is going to be any other kind of voice coming in there, it's going to basically be the Samajwadi Party first. The Congress is decimated, and the BSP currently isn't a major force, although there is some nostalgia about Mayawati's time. So my point is, you don't even have your act together at the level of the state, but suddenly you're dreaming of being PM because there was a minor little wave for the Congress, and I don't want to discount it, you know, I mean, I would say it was significant that the Congress won, you know, three sets of assembly elections in heartland states, BJP heartland cowbelt states, Chhattisgarh, Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh. So you think that the Congress will do this, and then, you know, you think that because Rahul Gandhi is not an acceptable figure or he doesn't have street cred, etc., you're going to jump in. Mamata Banerjee suddenly starts dreaming of PMship. I'm sure the thought has passed Akhilesh, you know, Yadav's mind as well. And you know, there's a kind of presumptuous arrogance out here. I know that it's a bit of a cliche. People have used that a lot for the Congress as well. But, you know, I don't know. It just seems that operationally they didn't have their game together. The second thing is that, you know, I think this business of like calling Amit Shah a great strategist and all is, it's really kind of overrated, because here's the thing, that at the end of the day, I think most parties and most politicians from these parties, they are not going to stoop as low as Amit Shah will. That Modi stoops pretty low. And then, you know, once he wins, he's all temporarily or occasionally he throws, you know, a few sort of crumbs in this manner, which he thinks is gracious. But Amit Shah goes even lower. Like Amit Shah, you know, pardon my language, that he does, he like the work he does is like the real dog shit, you know, and again, pardon my language. So he stoops really low, you know. In Gujarat, he made this speech about Alia, Malia, Jamalia, which was basically just saying that, you know, Muslims are going to take over. So the specter of, you know, rabid terrorist Muslims breeding and kind of swamping 1 billion Hindus, he has played it to the hilt. So when you see...
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. I think a point going forward is, if there is a left of center coalition or a centrist coalition in India that is being built, it can't be built 2 days before an election result is declared. You can't have these regional clowns clambering around saying, I want to be prime minister, whether it's my only. So I'm thinking, you know, cut to 5 years, 5 years down the line. A similar trick will be played out. This is copybook kind of majoritarianism, where you say that, you know, this country has 90 of us and 10 of them, right? Mm-hmm. And historically, the 10 of them have been pandered to, right? And you have been made victims. We are the people who will... So this is kind of, you know, classic techniques of letting the majority feel like victims. And to be fair, in certain cases, in certain legislation, certain provisions, Congress and other parties have pandered to this. So that's a whole separate conversation. Let's cut to 5 years down the line. If there isn't, if this vacuum of not having a counterpoint to Modi, right, is not addressed, not 24 hours before the election results are declared that I want to be PM, because then people realize that you are not only bereft of kind of any electoral capital, but also bereft of any moral capital. And people like Mayawati, people like Mamata Banerjee, I think Chandrababu Naidu is a decent enough bloke, but, you know, he was busy trying to call out coalition numbers, and he couldn't even hold down his own state. So there are lots of things that have gone on. I think the question would be, given that this is the way the innings has played out, what will happen between now and in the next 5 years? So obviously, Modi's got a mandate to run the country and do the best he can. And, you know, he's promised to be an inclusive prime minister, not Amit Shah, but Modi. He's made those noises. The question is, how do we fast forward 5 years down the line? What can change in the political alignment? Because, again, if you're back to Khandani politics of Congress, right, whether it's, you know, Rahul Gandhi's changed as a person, or, you know, he's got his sister coming up alongside him, you'd be the essential regional politicking in India is going to be the same, right? So unless there's somebody who can form a coalition from the get-go, you know, we'll have a repeat of this ad infinitum.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, there's a few things that are going to happen in terms of... So I think, you know, I'm going to just share some thoughts about what will happen in terms of coalition politics and all, my view. And then maybe we can wrap this up and we can, you know, do a part two where we take up some other issues. Because I think there's a whole very complicated set of issues about what's going to happen at the level of governance and all, which we really should talk about. But I think, I'm just going to make one point where this, I'll say that the BJP's messaging, you know, has been absolutely phenomenal. There's no question about it, right? Now, again, they stoop very low. But even if they didn't stoop low, credit where credit is due, just their organizational structure is very good. And I think I've said this time and again in the context of different conversations in, you know, on the podcast, that the BJP internally has historically been more democratic than the Congress. And it's also been a cadre-based party, which is that, it works with this very good structure of like volunteers, workers, etc. So obviously a lot of that has like translated over to its messaging. And then, as you know, just noted that they also don't have any kind of natural constraints, which, you know, at the end of the day, the Congress is now constrained by its own previous history plus its professed commitment to secularism. So even as the Congress flirts with Hindutva or engages in soft Hindutva, it has to make some secular noises. The BJP has been out and out communal. Hindutva is an out and out communal ideology. So there are no constraints and they can stoop super low when it comes to minorities, especially Muslims, Christians and Dalits. Okay. Now, I think what one of the things the success is has been that they have completely, for instance, managed to divert attention from the fact that plenty of BJP members and BJP allies are Khandani and dynastic themselves. I mean, Piyush Goyal, Nirmala Sitharaman, you know, any number of other, like look at Sunny Deol, any number of, you know, MPs, ministers, etc. and the BJP allies, the Akalis, the Badals, completely Khandani dynastic, not one iota less than the Congress, but they've managed to make Rahul Gandhi somehow the embodiment of this, you know, privilege born into kind of wealth, luxury privilege, and divert the attention. So they've done the same thing. They've done the same thing with regard to getting 1984 anti-Sikh riots on the table, but somehow not, you know, getting no one, not the media, not people, to talk about the 2002 riots. But yes, I mean, from an electoral point of view, I think the question is going to be that, you know, typically in a coalition, you develop something like a common minimum plan, common minimum program. Now, development, is that going to work? I don't know, because the Modi government, by all accounts, economically did disastrously poorly. But it's on the basis of jingoism that they managed to really kind of consolidate the vote. So what common plan the coalition can come up with, I think that's going to be instrumental. And it's, you know, it's going to take some kind of Herculean feat. So there's, aside from the question of unity, you know, working out deals beforehand, a lot of canvassing on the ground, which the BJP seems to have, you know, a head start on. I just think that, again, ideologically, in terms of a catchphrase, in terms of, you know, whether it's Sabka Saath, Sabka Vikas, Chowkidar, whatever, what can they come up with? Because thus far, most of what the Congress and others have been doing is, even when they've come up with, you know, things that have played well on Twitter, it's basically been a kind of reaction to what the BJP has done.
I think we've covered significant ground in this first part, which is, you know, we recognize that this has been a sweep for the BJP, though lots of people were not expecting a stronger performance. Clearly, somehow the campaign has cut through and has got them, you know, as I said, after in post-independence India, a double-header government that is non-Congress with one term under its belt. That is remarkable. There's been peaceful transition in the democratic system, so much to be thankful for. But I think in the next episode when we talk about it, let's circle back on this issue that, you know, let's fast forward 5 years. What now? What needs to happen between now and then? Not for a government to necessarily change, right? But to have a credible, thought-through opposition plan, which was completely missing this time around.
Okay, let's do that. All right, take care.
Chalo, take care.
Thank you so much for listening to us. Rohit and Bunty would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.